are here. Happy Friday. This is a really big Friday. I know it's the end of the month. People are booking loads. People are probably authorizing carriers that they shouldn't. But it's Halloween. And I decided to bring you a scary plaintiff attorney and a scary defense attorney to scare the crap out of all of you. Because it's my favorite thing to do on Halloween. All right, welcome to Matt Gaines Live. I am Cassandra Gaines. I hope that y'all can hear me okay. Let me check YouTube real quick, because that's where everybody should be. I know a lot of you are on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, something else I'm streaming on. But what I want you to stream on and what I want you to do is go over to YouTube. In every social media posting, I put the YouTube links on there. So go over there. Let's see. It's looking good. Can you guys hear me okay? Hope you can. Let me know in the chat if you can't. I want to welcome everybody to the show. So today, I have two attorneys for you that are going to join us, and they're both very famous, have a lot of experience with litigating broker and shipper liability cases, which are very different than trucking cases. And I think that this is a good time to talk about cases because we have... just checking to make sure everybody can hear me and everybody's happy on YouTube. I think that this is a good time to talk about this because I'm hearing a lot of people lowering their vetting standards. That's one thing because they're trying to gain capacity, and we want to talk about that today. And then the other piece is that I'm seeing an increase in the amount of lawsuits against brokers and shippers. So I want to bring you the experts. Today's show is sponsored by three companies. These are three of my favorite companies. So you can see down at the bottom, you've got Lean Staffing, which I think everybody right now is using Lean Staffing. If you're not, you need to reach out to David Bell. You need to talk to him because they will improve your operations. And they're already servicing so many people and have such a great reach with regards to expertise and operations. So reach out and get to know David Bell and Lean Staffing team. Welcome, Lean Staffing. OTR Capital, my favorite factoring company. I love them. They're based out of Atlanta. You guys remember Grace? She came on the show. I love the fact that they offer it's more like a family style factoring environment, and they'll take care of you. They have back office work that they do for you as carriers and brokers, and we trust them. We trust them with our data. We trust them with no hidden fees. So that's why I thought they were okay. I love them, and I want them on the show. Now a new one is over here, Swan Leap. Isn't that a cool name? I've actually known about Swan Leap for a while. I saw Brad Hollister speak on, I think it was like a conference or something, and he was so smart, and I looked up Swan Leap, and I got to know the company. They are a TMS. They mostly are for shippers, but they're starting to get into the brokerage space, and what I want you guys to do is to check them out, because personally, I've worked with a lot of different TMS products. This one is flexible, and you need flexibility with our TMS. And for those who are in legal and finance, it runs a lot of great reports as well. And I just think that this one is a better fit when you want to integrate with your shippers and when you want to run reports and you want to have different things done. They're just more flexible. So get to know Brad Hollister. He's around. He should be in the comments. I think I saw him. You guys, let me know if there's anything else going on with tech, because I'm asking everybody to be patient with me because tech is so hard for me. So two things about tech, well, about the rest of the show, and then I'm going to open right up and we're going to get to the work. Oh, I see Destiny's here. Hi, Destiny. She just joined the Madtropolis group. Roger Moore just joined the Madtropolis group. So let's talk about that for a minute. When you see below, you can see right underneath, there's a button that says join. And I made another button, and I'm going to do this right now. So after this show, at 3 o'clock Central Time, so right when we're done, my plaintiff attorney is going to escape, but my defense attorney is going to stay. And we're going to have a private discussion about vetting carriers. It will be intense. It will be private, and it's going to be here on YouTube in a private group. You can see in the chat on YouTube, I put the link in there. Amanda Miller will probably... distribute it for us if she has time. She's my favorite freight broker from Alabama. Click on that link, join more and more and more. So become a member, and we're going to do that today. And then later on, I'll show you the link for when we're going to be there at 3 o'clock. Last thing, and then we'll get to it. Last thing. If for any reason I freeze and the and you don't see me anymore. Just refresh the page and go back to my main Mad Gains YouTube page, and you'll see I went live again, okay? So that's all you have to do. I can already see I'm kind of freezing up. Oh, technology really loves me. All right. Before I introduce my guests, I'm going to play a video because it's easier to play the video and talk about the case than to go through it talking. So give me 1 second. I'm going to pop on over and I'm going to play our video.
Mike was 25 years old and enjoying life when a tractor trailer crossed the median into oncoming traffic and flipped over. Mike didn't have a chance as he tried to avoid the truck that had blocked all the lanes of I-80. He was rendered quadriplegic. He now needs to be moved, fed, and cared for 24/7. The at-fault truck company only had $750,000 insurance. Mike doesn't have the money to get the care he needs, with Medicaid only paying for limited home health care. Mike's future care will cost from $7 million to $18 million. Like Mike, many truck crash victims end up on programs like Medicaid, which burden taxpayers and still don't meet the victim's needs. The cost to care for an injured 20-year-old who needs part or full-time medical care is from $2 million to over $20 million. This doesn't include medical expenses or account for inflation.
All right, welcome. We are done with our video, which I am having feedback. It's a little choppy, maybe not. Let me know in the remarks, and I'll try to figure out what I can do to fix that. Okay, I'm going to welcome my guest, Michael. Can we start with you, our famous plaintiff attorney? First question is, do you have your face on a billboard?
I do not.
You do not? I see him all over the place, the Texas Hammer, the crazy billboards, and I'm like, oh boy. Plaintiff attorneys.
Yeah, it's interesting because on one hand, it's easy. I hate them, right? And the ads mm-hmm. and a lot of them are so schlocky. They make us all look horrible. And it's kind of interesting. People who are hired by insurance companies, they don't have to go out to advertise to get the business. So how do people know about you?
Yeah, that's
that
point.
Being said, I don't need to do it. I don't do it. My cases all come from other lawyers. You're freezing up, but I'll just keep talking.
I'm sorry. The internet.
You're frozen a good me. It wasn't something I was conscious about, but actually I remember as a little boy. So there's a case, Leeserman in the state of Michigan, ride in the truck with him. And it was like one of the doors fell off on him and he got a hernia. But anyhow, so like, I love trucking. I always wanted to be a lawyer. My family had the law firm I got involved in, and I suddenly realized I wanted to do things. I was doing well, but I wanted to do things that make a difference in the world, mm-hmm. that make the world safer, that I just feel great about. And I had a couple of trucking cases in the 90s, and I saw trucks where brakes weren't working, mm-hmm. electrical wasn't working, horrible injuries. And I thought, here's a place where there's a niche where I can represent people and do some good in the world. That's very important to me.
Yeah. It's I like hearing that story because often when I ask people, oh, how did you get into the transportation industry? They're usually like, oh, I got sucked in and then I never came back out. That's usually my stories. I got sucked in and didn't come back out. Ted, welcome to the show. Ted, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah, it's an interesting question. I guess Michael and I had a little bit in common. My dad was a truck driver as well, and I have a son that's a truck driver. And Michael and I are both truck drivers, so we both have our CDLs. And so I guess when I got into law, there probably wasn't a whole lot of alternatives. So I've been representing truckers for a long time. And, you know, somebody has to stand up for these guys. I mean, they have a tough job. It's they're away from home. They work long hours, and they have to put up with a lot of crap on the highway. And I guess I just come by it naturally.
Yeah, I'll make one correction: I do have a commercial driver's license, and it's Exhibit A. I am not a truck driver. There's a difference between having a CDL yes. and being a truck driver.
A huge difference. Michael, this lawsuit, the one that I led the discussions about, I'm glad I'm hearing the audio is coming through live and clear. The video is just a little squishy. So whatever, we're just going to keep going and then I'll fix it later on. So this lawsuit, for those people who the video was glitchy or they weren't able to really understand what's going on in the video, could you tell us a little bit about it? And this is the C.H. Robinson Costco Miller lawsuit, the one that I've been kind of leading with because I wanted to attract shippers and brokers to understand this case and liability.
Yeah, and there was just a decision in the Ninth Circuit, the highest court in the land, to address broker liability in this way. So
it was a huge decision. Hey, congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you. I'm so thrilled for Michael Miller. So, you know, you started talking about plaintiffs' lawyers. And let me say, I handle a dozen cases at a time. Right now, I have 10 death cases and 2 quadriplegia cases. Michael Miller's one of those. I sit with families. I've sat with his mom and dad who take care of him every day in ways that are disgusting. I can't even get into the things they have to do to take care of his body. I really want to help. So I sit with them. I look at what happened and I look at the motor carrier and I see where do I have good faith arguments? Who's responsible here? You know, it wasn't Michael. He's driving down the road, a tractor trailer, in icy conditions, crosses the median, flips over. He tries to avoid it and can't, and goes underneath it. So, tractor trailers should be driving at a safe speed and shouldn't go across the road and flip over. I look at it and I want to look at the motor carrier and see what was the road. What I did in that case is I looked, and as I looked more and more, what I saw was a chameleon carrier. I saw a carrier that had its authority taken for over and over having out of service violations and fines and insurance problems, and then reformed and then reformed. And I see a lot of themes in cases. I've seen this in other cases. And when I looked, I found the broker, I thought the broker should know this. And it turns out they did know it. They actually knew because they had done business with the prior saying, formed a new entity under his dad's name, but continue to talk to him. Mm-hmm. So that was C.H. Robinson. We sued the broker and we sued Costco in the case. Costco has been since dismissed. We had a good faith basis. And when we looked, there were questions of, what did they know? Who did they hire? Did they do due diligence? And when we looked into it and were satisfied, we ended up dismissing them. Well,
Sorry to interrupt. So to back up for those shippers who are kind of leaning in, like, what did you look at? Because a lot of these shippers are new to this. They're like, wait, didn't hire the carrier. What were you looking at?
Yeah, that's a good question when you say I didn't hire the carrier. So I kind of divide the shippers into two. Right away, I'm looking, did the shipper directly hire the carrier? And if so, what did they look at? What did they know or should have known? That type of thing. Now, if a shipper goes out and is reasonably careful in hiring a broker, right? And it turns out that they actually didn't have any part of selecting the carrier, they've done what I believe is reasonable, then I'll look at it and dismiss them. Or the reality is I get along with a lot of defense lawyers because this is all I do is trucking. And I'm at the point where I'll exchange documents early on, sometimes before the suit's filed, to kind of save that lawsuit.
So Ted, when you're defending these types of cases, because Ted, I wanted you to come on the show because there's actually not a lot of defense attorneys that truly know how to defend a broker shipper case. The defense attorneys and the insurance adjusters, they try to approach it as a trucking case. And as we all know, any of us who've worked in logistics and worked at a trucking company and then worked at a logistics company, it's completely different. So Ted, what do you think plaintiff attorneys are looking at with shipper liability in addition to what Michael has said? And then also, how do you defend it?
Well, I may end up saying this a lot because, and all due respect, Michael, I had a judge once tell me, well, when you ever say that, I know rest of it, you're not going to agree with the thing I said. But here, the reality of it is that in most cases where you have a trucking accident and the Michael or a plaintiff's attorney names the broker and or shipper as a defendant, it's usually only in catastrophic cases because they're looking for a deeper pocket to pay a judgment or a settlement or a verdict. So, you know, typical cases, you know, tell you a typical trucking company has $1 million in liability insurance. Well, if the case is worth less than $1 million, Michael's never going to sue the broker or the shipper. It's only those cases. He talked about death cases and he talked about paraplegic cases. Those cases, usually if the motor carrier only has $1 million, then he's looking for a deeper pocket. So, you know, in all due respect in terms of safety and liability, most plaintiff's lawyers follow the money. Am I wrong, Michael?
Well, I'll say two things. One is you're right. It doesn't make sense to sue the broker if it's a broken bone that's healed. You know, there's enough coverage many times with the motor carrier. I take a little exception. Maybe it's the way I work of saying that it's not about safety. It's about both. And I hear you. What I caution, so I talk to lots of lawyers. I teach lots of lawyers. And we now have a board certification through the Academy of Truck Accident Attorneys and the MBTA in truck accident law. And so when I'm talking to lawyers, I'll say exactly what you said. You don't just sue brokers or shippers because they're the deep pocket. You have to do some due diligence. So I agree we shouldn't just scattershot these things. Mm-hmm. And there's a duty of reasonable care. So I'm looking for these specific, was there a conditional rating? Was it a new entrant and there was no due diligence done? Was there evidence it was a chameleon carrier? There's all kinds of, you know, checklists of things.
For my shippers, to dig in deeper, you had said that you look at the reasonableness of how they've selected a broker or a carrier. Let's talk about a broker though. Like in this case, what were you thinking when you were thinking, well, maybe I should sue the shipper here? Because they improperly picked C.H. Robinson for the shipment. Is that what you were thinking?
Or
you can speak in general terms. You don't have to speak about this case either.
Yeah. I mean that it's an ongoing case and there's some kind of strategic decisions, there. But on the whole, again, I'm looking like, did they directly hire the motor carrier? Were they involved in that? Sometimes, so I'm almost always brought in by other lawyers. It's great if I get a case early on, if I call the defense lawyer, most of them know me and we can start talking and I can get information. You know, if someone calls me and there's a person that's quadriplegic and the statute of limitations, we have to file a lawsuit this week or they lose the right to sue, then in that situation, I'm going to look if there's a good faith basis. I'm going to look at the shipper and the broker and maybe dismiss them. But, sometimes it doesn't come in as ideally as I'd like. I'd like to have time to look at those things.
Ted, I have a lot of clients and friends that still hire conditional carriers. And what they do is they call the carrier and they say, hey, you're in conditional status, but it's tight capacity. We really need capacity. We need to run this load. It's Friday, 5 o'clock, let's go. So then they say, do you have like a safety plan or a plan you can share with us as the broker or the shipper and let us know that, hey, you're working on this conditional status. You're okay. So we can keep moving loads with you. Have you seen that? And how do you and what are your thoughts about that kind of activity? Because I still see it a lot, and Cassandra has a very aggressive thought.
As you know, on rated carriers, probably 80% are rated. So you're left with those that have a satisfactory rating, and then of course you have some unconditionals. I think as a broker, you're always taking the risk by hiring a conditional carrier, because if God forbid there is a tragic accident, a catastrophic accident, you can probably almost bet you're going to find yourself in a lawsuit, and Michael's going to love the idea that you're conditional, And he'll have experts lined up to say that a motor carrier, that a broker should never hire a conditional carrier. But as we know, sometimes you know, carriers maybe have one bad accident, or they have a series of issues and they're put on conditional status, and they work very hard to try to get out of that conditional status and get back to least unrated. I mean, I've helped carriers do that in the past, and sometimes you can do it over a period of weeks, but sometimes it takes some time to do it. And so, getting a plan from the motor carrier is better than just saying, oh, well, you're conditional, you're authorized to run, so go ahead and run. I think if you at least do some due diligence, say, well, what's your plan, and what was the reason you were put on conditional status, and what are you doing to address those reasons? You know, that's going to help you, I think, later on down the road, don't you think, Michael?
Yeah, well, for sure. I mean, if a broker hires a conditionally rated motor carrier, my first question is, well, did you get their corrective action letter? No. Many times the answer will be, what? What's that?
Oh, I mean, yeah.
So many of the cases I see are pretty extreme. They're conditional, but they never looked. The Linhart case, you know, that was in Oregon where we got punitive damages, was a conditionally rated carrier. We're not actually sure if it was showing up at the time as conditional or unsatisfactory, because the broker never looked to see any of that. So, if there's a letter, I mean, that's better than nothing. Now, what does the letter say? I have letters that I've gotten where the motor carrier said, I'm not making this up, I didn't know that we had to do drug testing. Now that we know that, we'll
do it now. We'll be better.
Yeah, until our crash, but
yeah. I always tell Ted, I won't ask Ted. I'll just make the statement. I don't know how much brokers know about trucking safety. So when they receive those conditional letters or whatever, the corrective action plans, do they even know what they mean? What's going on? And is that sufficient? And I fear opening that door for Michael to make exactly the argument I'm making. And then you have someone on the stand who has no idea with safety. And they're like, oh, well, here's a corrective action plan. I just went with it. And we have an accident. And to me, it's a slam dunk. I mean, Michael got punitive damages for that case. So
I suspect that sophisticated brokers know about the different ratings. And if you have an unsophisticated broker, then, you know, that could be an issue. But, you know, most brokers are you know, get on carrier 411 or some other type of platform where they can check out carriers, or they're notified about carriers who are on conditional status. And, you know, you see different kind of, you know, the broker carrier agreements that you see, sometimes they say you cannot be conditional. You have to either be satisfactory or unrated. You can't have a conditional or unsatisfactory rating. So sometimes those are taken care of. I mean, you whatever standard you have for your motor carrier, you ought to put that in your broker carrier.
Michael, we have some comments in the, by the way, there was a really funny comment I have to tell you guys.
Oh, good.
Someone says, I once got an LOA that looked like it was written in crayon by a 4-year-old. Sorry, I saw that shit. And I was like, oh yeah, I can see that. So, I think that, right now we have a lot of compliance and legal people who are being put on the spot by leaders of brokers and shippers saying, we need more capacity. And the quickest way to get more capacity is, do you remember where you said that you were only going to hire carriers with 1 year of authority? I want to go down to 3 months now. Michael, what do you do when you hear that? What is usually your approach to a case when you hear a 3-month-old carrier got in this big accident and the broker used to have a year of authority, year requirement, but now the broker, the shipper's like, we need capacity, so we're going to 3 months.
Yeah, I want to know what are they thinking. I think I know what they're thinking. And I think there's an assumption. Brokers assume that motor carriers know what they're doing. Motor carriers assume the brokers know what they're doing. And so the shippers
assume that they all know what they're doing. The brokers and carriers know what they're doing.
Yeah. And so the cases that I see, these motor carriers, and let me just say this, it's very important. Most truck drivers, most truck companies are doing everything they can to be safe. They're honest, good hardworking people that want to, you know, get home to their families or loved ones. They're trying to do the right thing, you know? So, I am the first to correct lawyers when they get up and talk about, oh, these drivers on crystal meth and whatnot. I mean, yes, those are cases that I see a lot. That's not the typical truck driver, just like the typical plaintiff's lawyer is not the way you're describing.
Right? On a billboard and having $6 million birthday parties. Sorry, Michael, I had to say it. You know, I can't leave it alone. And also, while I'm at it making blanket statements, I might as well just say that it annoys the ever-living daylights out of me, Ted. It annoys me that we still have carriers on the road that are getting in accidents high on drugs and driving drunk and watching porn while they're driving. It drives me up the wall that we still have this activity. And then people get mad at plaintiff attorneys. Well, what do you think is feeding the plaintiff attorneys? This crazy.
You know what? Porn and now video gaming and other activity on the phone causes more crashes than anybody would imagine. Many crashes that you've heard about that end up under protective orders and non-disclosures, so you can't talk about them. Yes, those kind of bad things happen. And you get carriers, the carriers that I see. Do you disagree, Ted? I mean, I see this. It's crazy how often.
You hear things like that, Michael. I mean, it's always anecdotal. Mm-hmm. It's always, well, I have a case where a guy was on meth, or I have a case where a guy was video streaming at the time. I always look for data. Are there studies out there that show this, that, you know, if you're on your cell phone with Bluetooth, you're more apt to have an accident? Or are there studies out there that say, well, what percentage of truckers are watching porn? I mean, I don't know that to be the case. I mean, I don't want to indict the whole industry simply because there's a few examples of somebody every once in a while looking at their phone.
I think my frustration, Ted, is that it still goes on. Like, and what do you think the community is doing from a safety perspective? Like, I wish we had more lobbying. Maybe it's out there. You're more in tune with this, but I wish there was more lobbying for more, maybe a higher barrier to entry for carriers or something.
We're having trouble attracting drivers to the industry in the first place. And I'm not suggesting that we only attract it because you can use your cell phone while you're driving. I'm not suggesting that at all. But, you know, I think to say that this is, I see people in their passenger cars doing the same thing all the time. I mean, I see, no disrespect for this, but I mean, I see ladies putting on makeup while they're driving the car.
That's
true. I mean, we're all have this distracted, this tendency to be distracted while we're driving. And, you know, look, every once in a while, I get a case where there's drug or alcohol on the part of the other driver. But I will tell you, from my practice, it's a small percentage. It's very small. Now, it should be zero, but it's not commonplace. Most of the guys test negative after the crash.
Yeah. I'm curious what you meant, because, and I start out by saying that this, I see the worst of the worst. So I'm not saying that every truck driver is out there watching porn streaming on their phone. And I see it many times, more than you would imagine. So when you're saying they could be on Bluetooth, I hope you're not saying it's okay to be watching porn as long as you're on the Bluetooth, right? And when you say that there's someone putting on makeup while they're driving, should car drivers be more careful? Hell yes. You know, do a majority of car truck collisions, are they caused by the car? I think so. I think a slight majority, maybe 60%, the best I can tell. Absolutely. And there's a reason why we have commercial driver's licenses and training, because as horrible as it is, that person putting makeup on driving their Honda Pilot is not going to do as much damage as driving a 40-ton truck.
Good point.
I mean, there is a difference.
I mean, I get that. And it's difficult for motor carriers to constantly monitor every activity of the driver while he or she is on the roadway. And our drivers got to look at their phone from time to time, or they got to text from time to time. Of course they do. But I would like to see some data on this subject before we start saying, well, this happens with any degree of regularity.
Okay, so here we go, right? We have to go back to the comments, because the goal of this show is to make sure that, because I've got two experts here, and I want to make sure that people get the chance to ask these two experts questions. And so we had a lot of activity when it came to vetting the carriers and comments. So I want to go back to that. Before I do, for those of you who are just joining us, yes, we seem to only have audio and a little freezy of the video. Apologize for that. I tried my hardest. After this show, you're going to, here's a sign up. Here's the link in the comments. Join us after the show for a private discussion about details of carrier vetting, activating and inactivating carriers, how exactly you're vetting carriers and the liability that's associated, the conversations that we want to have, but we can't when Michael's around. Sorry, Michael.
I'm happy to leave and you can talk about me. No
you're
problem.
So awesome. But I want to say that click on those links and join us. And what I'll do, I will stream differently than how I'm streaming now. I can't change now because we'll lose 300 people on all platforms. So I won't do that, but I will do a different stream when we jump on the next after the show discussion. So the links are in the comments here on YouTube and you can watch it now. Oh, it's better now. Thank you, Rhonda. All right, so we had some comments come through that I want to go back and look at. Thank you, Amanda Miller, for escalating some of these questions. Let's see. Ooh, good question. What's to Michael or to Ted, what are the best ways to document that a broker and a shipper has done their due diligence? Like, are you looking for documentation that they've done it? Is a certificate? What have you seen and you tell people that you prefer to see?
Ted, I'll let you start. I have some thoughts.
Okay, sure. Well, I think, you know, the first thing, especially in a litigated case, you're looking at the broker carrier agreement to make sure there is an agreement and what the terms of that are. Usually to define the relationship and also sets forth the criteria that the motor carrier has to meet to have that. So if you don't have a broker carrier agreement, you can get one of those. And then the second thing you should probably do is make sure whatever criteria you adhere to, whether it's, you know, operating authority or insurance and whatever the rating you want the carrier to be, you should make sure that you actually do that and you broker that freight. Make sure that carrier meets that particular criteria that you set forth. And you know, there's several services out there. And I'm not advocating any of these in particular, but there's like Carrier 411.
Yeah, don't use that one. Use Safer Watch. Carrier 411's okay, horrible.
whatever the platform is, I think probably most of the larger brokers would use that. And so obviously that has its own documentation you can keep with it. You know, it's one of these things you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yep.
There are experts out there that adhere to the plaintiff side that you should do some more due diligence in terms of the motor carrier.
Like what?
That you should send them surveys or interview the safety director or
Michael, do you believe that? Do you believe that we should send, okay, I'm a broker and I've got, or a shipper and I've got 15,000 carriers in my database. Do you believe that I should be sending them surveys?
Well, in the right circumstance, yes, you already are. If there's a high value cargo load, the broker will get on the phone and call the motor carrier to say, hey, our customer, big box, is really concerned. Here's, you know, $150,000 worth of USB drives.
Come on, just say VCRs.
We were talking yesterday. I said $150,000 worth of VCRs. Maybe they're all beta VCRs.
I want them back. Keep going though. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that dates me.
But if
you have a high value cargo load, mm-hmm. you get on the phone and you say, are you going to be locked up overnight? Are you going to protect the cargo load?
Yeah.
Brokers do that. Now, do you have to do that on every load? If you're using RMIS, SaferWatch, Carrier 411, whatever you're using, you're getting a lot of data. And if there's certain criteria, if they're conditionally rated, I mean, I'm not going to give an extensive list because those companies have all kinds of
lists,
you know,
things.
But if there's a conditional rating, if it's a new entrant, have they been through a safety audit? How do you know if they have any safety in place? Because I can tell you some of the cases I have where we've sued brokers, one of them, a 22-year-old who comes over from the Ukraine with no experience that says, hey, this is a way to have, make some money, no CDL, knows nothing about trucking, nothing against Ukrainians or 22-year-olds, but all those things together, they just send into the USDOT their $300 and they can start operating. And then when the government asks for a safety audit, they ignore it. So there are things, if I'm a broker and I see that there's a new entrant carrier that hasn't been through a safety audit, I'm not going to hire them.
Not many of them have been, Michael. It's like a very small percentage that have been.
Well, I'm not
been.
Talking about ratings. So there's, I'm not talking about a fitness rating that they get a satisfactory or conditional.
No, we're talking about the same thing, the new entry audit thing.
Yeah, but new
entry. Actually, the statistics, they just came out this year that I think 86%
for 20,
the last year was like 2017.
Yeah.
Of new entrants, we're able to get the safety audit. It was much worse in previous years.
Oh, okay.
The FMCSA
Cassandra on date.
New entrant safety audit program provides that they have to be audited within the first 12 months. And they're a new entrant, I guess, for a period of 18 months. But I have to disagree with Michael on the new entrant. I mean, I don't know that too many guys come over here from Ukraine and just buy a $150,000 truck and start a trucking company. Usually, you know, they're an owner operator before, they've lease purchased trucks, and then they get their own operating authority. So I think the driver himself or herself or it's usually small companies that are probably more new entrants than large companies. And I think you probably have to look at that new entrant to see what the level of experience is. But I certainly don't want to advocate a system where, you know, it's been time honored in this country that a driver starts with one truck, starts a company, he builds it up. I mean, look, probably 2/3 of the trucking companies in our country started that way. I mean, even some of the larger ones started with, you know, a handful of trucks. Mm-hmm. We're all a new one.
Can I ask you both a question, though? When did brokers and shippers step into that role of ensuring carriers are safe? It feels weird. Like, brokers don't know shit about safety. They're tech companies. They're kids on the phones. Like, Michael, when did we get there and why?
Well, we've always been there because there's the law of negligence, the law that says whatever you do, you better do it reasonably carefully. So if you actually know that this carrier used to be ABC trucking and now they're XYZ trucking so that they can evade the, you know, their fines, well, a jury gets to decide, was that reasonable for you to give them that load? If you're hiring a new entrant without seeing if they have a modicum of safety. And again, I'm seeing the worst of the worst cases,
yeah.
But unlike what Ted is saying, I'm getting ready to take a case to trial where there's two guys who both said, this was a disaster waiting to happen. We made a mistake. It was a guy who was a realtor who thought, let's start a motor carrier, hire a truck, you know, lease on a truck. And they didn't know what they're doing. Anyone, you and I right now, we could, we maybe a little bit know what we're doing. You know, we could do Gaines, Leaserman, and Perryman. We could send in $300 and by the end of the day, we could have a trucking company.
I know, it's unreal. I guess our government has decided that that's okay, yeah. Though.
I'm all for everyone, you know, the American dream. That's really not what's happening. So do that, but make sure that someone does pre-employment drug and alcohol testing, audits their logs, has some systems in place, because I'm seeing cases where they don't. Anyhow, go ahead. I don't want to know.
No, I asked a question. I wanted to hear this for sure. By the way, someone in the comments, going back to Ted's comment about, you know, folks coming over and just buying a truck, because I'm not very good at this. I thought they did. I thought it was really easy. But somebody said $150,000 for a truck. Any dirt ball operator can buy a beat up Freightliner for $10,000 and get on the road. Sorry. You guys are cracking me up with these comments. And I get to be unprofessional. These two still have to maintain their game face. So I get to have fun while you guys are working. So we had some other questions that popped in. I see that Mark Perkins is here, one of my favorite defense attorneys. I actually used him when I was at Schneider. He was wonderful to work with. So what I'm looking at here is someone else says, Ted or Michael, how do you want us to vet carriers? What do you want us to look at when they have no safety ratings?
Well, no safety ratings. So that's different than a a new entrant where there's no data. If you're saying an unrated carrier, which Ted is right, it's 80, I've heard recently 90, it's somewhere 80 to 90% of carriers are not rated. So that means they haven't had a compliance review, but there's still data out there. So what I'm going to look to is what's the out of service rate? How often are there drivers and vehicles pulled off the road for being illegal? And if I look on the government website, which I can do in about 12 seconds, and I see that they're at a 30%, you know, one in three of their trucks are out of service, then I'm going to look further, and I'd caution brokers against hiring that unless they are doing some due diligence saying, why is, you know, maybe there's an explanation. We had this look, it was one driver who was responsible for all of that. He's no longer with us, and you verify that. But otherwise, right, I wouldn't hire a carrier that's got a 30% out of service rate.
Well, I would add that, you know, probably, Michael, you do this because I've seen it done in a lot of cases. I mean, you'll go to CSA and look at the basics on a motor carrier and probably try to find out whether there are any alerts, whether there's a, you know, an action plan in place and things like that. So I would think CSA is probably not a bad place to start, especially when you can, if on the public website, you may not be able to get some of the information, but if you are actually going to vet a carrier, if you're looking for the most careful way to do it, you probably would dig in and ask the carrier to provide you with maybe their crash rating, safety scores. You know, I'm not advocating that. I'm not saying that that's the standard. I don't know that's the standard in the industry, but the question was, you know, how do I vet them? I think that's probably the easiest way.
Yeah.
Most of that data is online.
And for those of you who are looking, go ahead, Michael.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, because look, we don't have a case together right now, so we can talk and we won't hold against each other in a case. But, you know, you can look to out of service rate by going to SaferSys. You can look to a lot of this stuff. The reality is, even though you're going to fight and say the Fast Act says the CSA relative scores aren't, the reality is that brokers have access to that through SaferWatch Carrier 411. They have the eCSA scores. And certainly you can see if someone's at a 99%, you know, the worst 1%, that there's red flags that get thrown. Yep.
And I saw one of my favorite people, Brad Hollister, just popped up and said, well, what is a good percentage rate? And I think, and I saw that come out, a couple more people had asked that question. When you guys go to the website, it'll tell you what the national average is. And then you can compare that carrier's percentage to the national average. Is that correct, Michael and Ted?
You're talking about the out-of-service rate or the CSA relative
rate?
Out-of-service rate. I mean, there's a whole discussion there. The first thing that I have to say, because it bothers the heck out of me, that it's gone down from 23%. I think it's been as low as 18%. Right now, it's around 20% out of service rate for vehicles. What that means, and that's crazy. What that means
is
one in five tractor trailers that are pulled over for random inspections or post-crash inspections. The post-crash are a small part of it, but random inspections have violations so severe they're illegal to drive another inch. Severe safety violations. That's crazy that we have that level of out of service violations.
Blows my mind.
Now, if your company is over, it doesn't preclude. I mean, I think if someone's at 16%, I still wonder why. But if you're over those, and it says right on the SaferSys, when you look at it, it'll say national average and this company for driver, vehicle, and hazmat. So that's one thing to look at.
Hold on one minute. I was just checking to make sure that people don't have more questions on that point at all to further it. But I would like to dive in and say, for those of you who are looking for exact details, we said and I were going to talk about that afterward. Like, I have my own standard of how I vet carriers and how I think the carrier should be vet. Not saying that that's gold standard, not saying that that's going to keep you from getting sued, because you can get, anyone can get sued for anything. It's just
the Mad Gains standard. You need to start giving people, they can put it in the file.
We were
Mad Gains certified.
Yes.
Well,
going to have that one day.
There's a school of thought out here that brokers shouldn't be sued or be liable for the conduct of the motor carrier. And really, it's relatively new that this whole idea of suing the broker is sort of a new concept. I guess it starts, I think you'd probably agree with me, Michael, starts with the Schramm decision and goes on from there.
Freaking C.H. Robinson's been getting annihilated with these cases.
You know, I don't know that I don't know that every state has accepted the idea that there's broker liability. I mean, it probably depends on the jurisdiction. And there's obviously there's case law out there that supports it. But, you know, the original school of thought was, well, look, brokers shouldn't, as you said, brokers should not be in the business of trying to dictate safety to motor carriers. They shouldn't be trying to vet them in that capacity. I mean, the old school was, okay, do you have operating authority? Do you have insurance?
Yep.
And do you not have an unsatisfactory rating? Those were the three. And there's a whole school of thought out there, that's all you need.
We have to pause there. I want everybody at Metropolis to listen, because I know you guys can hear me perfectly, even though the screen's all screwy sometimes. Listen to what he just said, because back in 2012, when I started working for the first broker I ever worked for, which was a dumpster fire of a broker, just so you guys know, attorneys were saying, don't look at safety data, broker, shipper, don't look at safety data. That is not your job. Stay away from it. And I think they were trying a black and white approach so that when the broker started getting into safety, Michael couldn't dig into, well, what did you look at? What is your experience in safety? Da, 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 da. Instead, it was, this is what the government tells us to do. Government doesn't say we have to look at safety. We're not going to do it. That used to be the old school thing. So for those of you, and I know some of you out there have some really, really old transportation attorneys that are still telling you, don't look at safety data. You got to look at safety data. So sorry, Ted. I just had to make sure everybody heard what you just said, because the times have changed and Michael's here illuminating that.
I know some folks in our industry who still fervently believe that's the case, and you know, maybe that's the way it should be, but I think in reality that it doesn't happen that way anymore. Being asked to do more vetting on it, but you know what? Here's my biggest gripe against broker liability. So let's assume I vet the company and they meet my criteria. How am I going to vet that truck driver that's pulling my load? I mean, say you have a company that is really a bad company, but you have a good truck driver, and the truck driver hasn't had any accidents, no tickets. He's you know, a million miles without an accident, and then he happens to have an accident, but he works for a company that's not so good. I mean, there's no way that a broker can ever control who that motor carrier puts into a truck, and the law's pretty clear that they don't have to do that. And that's when I look at every broker case I've ever had, I always wonder how is that broker going to control who's actually going to be driving that load?
Michael?
Yeah, it's one of the things I have to look at. So there's a few parts of that which are interesting. Different brokers, and I get to see a lot of different brokers, and I can't talk about their systems because there's proprietary stuff, but I've seen many different brokers who have data on every driver that's hauling one of their loads, and they're pinging that driver every 5 minutes, every hour. They are in touch with that driver. They know everything about that driver. So first of all, the brokers are getting into the drivers. But the other thing is where I see a case, because I hear what you're saying. There's, you need to do what's reasonable. What is reasonable? When I look at a case and there's a motor carrier who doesn't do pre-employment drug and alcohol screening, then they hire someone that an MVR would show drug and alcohol problems. And then they get in a crash that's caused because they're on drugs or alcohol. Well, now that's foreseeable. So that's why we have these legal concepts of like causation and was it reasonably foreseeable? You know, the Linhart case, which was the only case I think in the country where there's ever been punitive damages for a broker negligently selecting, those were extreme facts. You had a guy on crystal meth who got caught driving on crystal meth, who, and again, this is not every driver out there, but that was this case, was put in jail for 5 years for being on meth. When he gets out of jail, the motor carrier who had reincarnated 19 times, they had 18 or 19 different companies that were part of business for not drug testing people, put him back on the road without a drug test. And then he went off the road and hit another truck driver who was doing what he was supposed to, putting the chains on his tire, Kelly Linhart, and killed him. the broker never even looked to see that they had a conditional rating or unsatisfactory. It wasn't clear, but they never looked. There was no insurance because they were supposed to be certificate holders or additional insureds, and they weren't. They didn't do some of those basic things. So do they have to get into every nitty gritty of the company? No. But going back to what you're saying is like, do you just do the basics and have a blind eye and use that as a defense? As a trial lawyer, where I can't come in and convince 8 or 10 or 12 jurors of something that isn't reasonable. It's not so easy. You know, plaintiff's lawyers, you don't just get up in front of a jury and they give you money. There needs to be some common sense, right, that's there. And so if the broker has really done, they've looked at the corrective action plan, they've acted in good faith, you can put them on the stand, Ted, and the jury's going to listen to them, right? Now, if they haven't even looked, what am I going to say? You didn't even look. Yeah. It was willful blindness.
Easy argument.
And now there's this family that's dead.
No, I mean, I agree with you, Michael. I think in practice, if we had some guidance from the courts as to, well, this is all you need to do, would be those three things, then I think you could probably get away with that. But the problem is, you're going to ask those questions in trial, and that motor carrier is going to say, no, we only check insurance, operating authority, and as long as you're not unsatisfactory, you're okay with us. And you're right, they don't have much of a defense, especially if you find that the motor carrier has been non-compliant in a lot of different areas. But my gripe with the, sometimes what you'll find is they're not compliant as a particular area, let's say drug and alcohol, but the accident has nothing to do with drug and alcohol. And yet you make a broker case because they have a high drug and alcohol problem, but the accident had to do with distracted driving or whatever the case may be. There's not always a nexus between what's happening with the motor carrier and that particular driver.
I want to pause on this conversation because we have 7 minutes and I have something very important I want to talk about, which is the Coyote case. And the plaintiff attorney for the Coyote case was supposed to come on here and explain his theory of liability, which he articulated to me was a truck driver who had some safety concerns I saw in the complaint, but allegedly, I think what it said in the complaint was that the truck driver swerved the truck or something like that, and it was a flatbed truck, and then the truck swerved and the chassis, it was a huge rail chassis that was on the flatbed, came off, landed on another vehicle and killed a guy. So again, this is just me reading from the complaint, but the theory of liability was more focused on the how dangerous it is to move a flatbed oversized shipment. In Florida, where the case was filed, there was a if you are engaged in dangerous behavior law. And Ted and Michael will probably know that, maybe know that a little bit better than I would. But where you can't make an argument when you hire an independent contractor who's doing something that's considered a little bit dangerous, you can't lean on the, I'm just the independent contractor, not the employer. Florida does not allow for that. So in this case, there are two parts to it. One is this moving an oversized load is a little bit more dangerous. So you can't just say you're an independent contractor and you're not their employer. Then another piece is the loading and unloading. And I don't know if we can do this in 5 minutes, but first, could one of you explain better than I did the Florida law or kind of know the basics of it? I know neither one of you are probably licensed in Florida, but.
Well, I'll take a stab at it, if you don't mind, Mike. In broker liability law, even before this idea of just broker negligence, if the shipment was unusually dangerous, then there's several courts out there, Michael's favorite circuit, the Ninth Circuit, has held that there is a duty to investigate the motor carrier, especially if the load is unusually dangerous. So there's several long line of cases that hold that. So in that case, what's that duty to investigate? Well, it may be obviously more than just getting whether they have operating authority insurance. And if you have an unusually dangerous load, you may have to do that survey, or you may have to call that motor carrier and find out how they're going to manage that load. So I think the word of the wise, if you have that situation, you need to you need to do that. But generally, just general trucking without, regular reefer running up and down the road, most states have held that that's not hazardous activity. But Michael, I'll let you weigh in on it.
Well, I think that facts really drive cases and are important. And I do, I have a partners in the law firm in Florida, although I'm not licensed there, be clear about that. In that case, the important fact to me was they took pictures of how to load a locomotive that they put on a flatbed. And they said, here, this is how you properly move this super heavy locomotive. And then they never gave the pictures to the carrier. I believe the broker got the photos. Then they were told by the customer, make sure you load it this way. And they never gave them the photos. So when you hear those facts, I mean, look, I understand the law, dangerous instrumentality. It's almost like strict liability. We can make those arguments. I think the facts that drove this are, oh my goodness, you were told this is dangerous. Do it this way. And you didn't even relay that information. The court's going to find a way to hold you responsible. Mm-hmm. That's my a legal take on it.
This video will be available for rewatching and replay. And I think, oddly enough, although it skipped around in live, it'll be great for, I bet it will look good on post-production. I want you guys to rewind this section. If you are a flatbed broker or flatbed shipper or flatbed carrier, and also don't forget that if you also move oversized, anything unique stuff, things that you have to have unloading and loading instructions, make sure that you rewind and listen to that part and focus in, because I want you guys to be extra careful because these cases are on a rise. I will tell you that in my limited experience with the flatbed brokers I do know, and one of them actually, so Chandler has been on here from Next Exit Logistics. He does some really cool stuff. Anybody want to check out his website? He's not sponsoring this, but he does some really cool freight. But and then Amanda Miller is our flatbed broker in Alabama. But they have a lot of knowledge about loading and unloading, a ton. So at least the ones, the brokers I know, they are pretty good. I think it's the dabblers or the ones trying to get a shipment, don't know what they're doing. The you call, we haul brokers are the ones who are getting into these situations mostly, I'm betting. I'm going to wrap this up so that I can at least talk to Ted before we start our next session. Again, I'm going to put the links in the comments here on YouTube if you want to join us for the post discussion where we're going to go more into broker liability and some of the other things. I want you guys to look up Michael Leeserman in every post I've ever had. Look up Ted and Michael and research these two lawyers. These are my two experts that I look to. Joe Freed has been on this show before too. He's an amazing trucking plaintiff attorney. And I think Joe and Michael, I think you guys are really good friends, right?
Well, we're partners in the Florida firm, and a firm in Georgia, and I have the law firm for truck safety. Check it out. My website's truckaccidents.com. But let me, if we can, while we wrap down, is to say thank you for what you do, Cassandra. And I hope, I really mean this, I hope someday that I'm out of business, not that that's my goal, but because there's no more truck accidents, truck drivers are going to be out of business because of technology one day sooner or later. But yeah. I hope what we did today, that somebody has listened, that because of that, some family isn't going through what I have to sit down with them. So thank you for being a part of that. I think we're all part of that and all want to keep the road safer. Awesome. When I handle a case, this could be literally my family next whose life I'm saving. So thanks for being open-minded.
Smart man.
Let's Ted, keep the road safer.
Ted, do you want to give us your website and listen to me, insurance people, because I know I've solicited a lot of insurance people to watch this show. Please listen to me. Be careful when you have a broker liability case. Make sure you hire the right attorney.
It's just robertsperryman.com. But I do appreciate it. It's been fun being on the show. And I've had a case with Michael's partner before, and he's a great lawyer. It's always good to have cases with great lawyers. And I appreciate the opportunity, Cassandra, very much.
Thank you both. I feel very honored to have you both here. And Ted, you stay on with me, and we're going to hop on over to the member only. Michael, you're the best. You're amazing. Please keep in touch. Thank you.